Iranians hold rallies across the nation to denounce the latest riots that erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Israeli forces launch a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, killing one Palestinian and injuring several more. North Korea fires a ballistic missile ahead of a U.S. vice president's visit to the region and joint military drills between Seoul and Washington. Hello and welcome to World News, coming over live from our Tehran headquarters with me, Behruz Najaf. The top story this hour, Iranians are out on the streets across the nation to denounce the latest riots that erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Crowds of protesters are rallying to denounce the desecration of sanctities and acts of vandalism during the riots. The rioters blocked the streets, vandalizing public property and police vehicles and setting fire to dozens of ambulances. Now, that followed the death of a 22-year-old girl early this month after she was taken to a police station. Tehran Police Commander Hossein Rahimi has rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was physically assaulted. Officials say that she died of medical conditions.
Mahsa Amini, a name that has hit the headlines over the past days for her death in hospital after her detention by the Iranian police over her non-compliance with the Islamic dress code. While demonstrations have been held across the country demanding clarification regarding her death, there have been violent protests and riots leading to clashes with police and acts of vandalism against public property.
It's not about hijab in Iran. What is important is Islam, that Western countries want to get our hijab, our Islam from us.
Those who are rioting are in fact mercenaries who are paid by Iran's enemies. I advise all my fellow Iranians to be wise and cautious and stay away from the seditions plotted by our enemies.
Iranian officials say the death of Mahsa Amini is being exploited by foreign-backed organized groups to instigate chaos and wreak havoc across the country. On Friday, upon returning from New York, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said people's demand will be definitely heard. However, he noted that jeopardizing public security will not be tolerated. 22-year-old Mahsa was an Iranian Kurd from the city of Saqqez in Kurdistan province. On September 13th, she was on a trip to Tehran with her family when she was arrested by police. CCTV footage released by police showed that she passed out at the police station. 3 days later, she died in hospital.
While police have dismissed allegations that Mahsa was mistreated during detention, Iranian authorities have given assurance a thorough investigation into her death is underway. Now, many Iranians say they're all grieved for Mahsa's unfortunate death, yet they say the issue should not divide Iranians and harm national security. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Now, Iran's foreign minister says that Americans have sent messages recently indicating their preparedness to clinch a deal in the Vienna talks. Hossein Amir Abdullahian is currently in New York to hold meetings on the fringes of the UN General Assembly's annual session. He said that Iran has responded by telling the American side that only with a realistic approach and goodwill would it be possible to strike an agreement. He says Iran is ready for a lasting agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal, and that it is Washington that needs to make a decision that will lead to a strong and durable agreement. In 2018, the U.S. withdrew from the multilateral pact, throwing its fate into question. Iran, in response, scaled back some of its nuclear commitments. Several rounds of talks have been held in Vienna as part of efforts to revive the accord. Iran has criticized the United States for making exceptions to its communication sanctions when it comes to undermining the country's security and stability. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says that by loosening a number of communication sanctions while keeping the maximum pressure campaign in place, the U.S. is only trying to provoke instability in Iran. Kanani called those tactics a radical and nefarious designs meant to violate Iran's national sovereignty, and he said that they will not go unanswered. The U.S. Treasury has issued a license to loosen internet sanctions on Iran, allegedly to support the free flow of information to Iranian people. But the Iranian government says it has restricted access to internet in some areas to deal with violent riots and vandalism. Tensions continue to simmer in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, where regime forces have killed another Palestinian. That happened just hours ago. Three Palestinians were also injured during clashes that took place after Israeli forces stormed the city of Nablus early this morning. Israel frequently launches raids to intimidate and arrest Palestinians. Reacting to the latest incursion, Hamas has held the Palestinian resistance. The movement says the clashes showed the Palestinians' power and the readiness to enter into conflict to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israeli forces have killed around 100 Palestinians in the West Bank this year alone, making it the deadliest year since 2015. On Saturday, they killed a Palestinian claiming that he attempted the Raman attack, an allegation that Palestinians deny. Our correspondent Ramana Mona Kandil joined us a short while ago with more details on the Hamas reaction to the latest Israeli aggression against Palestinians.
The Palestinian resistance issued a statement saying that Palestinians will continue to be engaged in the different forms of resistance and struggle, and that it's the normal response to the ongoing Israeli crimes here in the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers' raids to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the least to do is to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Quds, and the whole Palestinian occupied territories. And as a natural response would be different forms of resistance, fighting the Israeli soldiers. And the more Palestinian martyrs would be killed by the Israeli forces, this would even strengthen the Palestinians while they are united in the face of the Israeli forces, the Israeli regime, and their atrocities.
Israeli settlers have again stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in what Palestinians view as a major act of desecration against the holy site in Al-Quds. A group of settlers entered the site under protection of the military this morning. Just days ago, a Zionist group announced plans to increase the visits during the Jewish New Year holidays beginning Sunday. The visits are highly controversial, because non-Muslims are banned from worshiping at a site under a decades-long agreement between Israel and Jordan, which is the custodian of the mosque. Now, just ahead of the Jewish holidays, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warned against continued intrusion, saying that Israel will be responsible for any consequences. The movement has warned that desecrating the Holy Mosque could lead to a major battle that will end the regime. Just hours ago, North Korea launched a single ballistic missile toward the sea off its east coast ahead of a visit to the neighboring south by a top U.S. official. South Korea says that a short-range ballistic missile flew around 600 kilometers before landing in the sea. Seoul has called the launch an unjustified act of provocation, saying its military is in full readiness to respond to any threat. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is planning to visit Seoul next week. Also starting Monday, South Korean American forces will be holding massive four-day military drills. Nuclear-powered aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan has already arrived in South Korea in preparation for the war games. The South and the U.S. routinely conduct drills in the sea. Pyongyang sees them as a rehearsal for invasion. Now, correspondent Jennifer Chang tells us why the number of missile launches by North Korea has picked up pace recently.
It was the first test by North Korea of a ballistic missile in nearly 4 months. So this was serious indeed. On June 5th, North Korea fired 8 short-range ballistic missiles all in one day. And it has conducted an unprecedented number of missile tests, including 17 ballistic missile tests and 2 cruise missile tests this year. This is largely due to the breakdown of talks between the U.S. and North Korea about the denuclearization issue of North Korea. There was a disagreement between the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump at their historic summits, the last one in 2019, especially after that, there were no further real discussions of denuclearization between the two nations.
Now, in Italy, people are casting their ballots in the early elections for a lower house and a Senate. The elections are forecast to return Italy's most right-wing government since World War II and usher in its first woman prime minister. A right-wing alliance led by Giorgia's Meloni's Brothers of Italy party appeared on course for a clear victory when the last opinion polls were published 2 weeks ago. However, there's been speculation that support for the left-leaning five-star movement has also picked up in recent days, and that could jeopardize the rightist alliance's chances of winning a majority in the Senate. But whatever the result, Meloni would be the obvious candidate for premier as leader of the right-wing alliance. The early elections were triggered by party infighting that brought down Prime Minister Mario Draghi's National Unity government in July. The Russian foreign minister accuses the West of developing what he calls a grotesque Russophobia and trying to fracture his country.
The official Russophobia in the West has reached an unprecedented grotesque scale. They are not shying away from declaring their intent to inflict military defeat upon our country, but also to destroy and fracture Russia.
Addressing the UN General Assembly, Lavrov said that the U.S. is trying to turn the entire world into its own backyard and has thrown a fit on referendums, which are being held in several Ukrainian regions. The Luhansk and Donetsk self-proclaimed republics in the east and the Russian-controlled parts of Kherson and Zaporizhia are holding referendums and joining Russia. And Moscow says it's up to the residents of the four regions to decide if they want to be part of Russia. The West, however, has strongly criticized the referendums, calling them a sham.
Referendums have begun in the Ukrainian regions of Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. The voting is set to run for 5 days until September 27. These referendums have been blasted by the West.
The very international order that we have gathered here to uphold is being shredded before our eyes. We cannot, we will not allow President Putin to get away with it.
As members of the Security Council, we must unequivocally reject Russia's attempts to annex Ukrainian territory.
But in contrast to how the media has called it illegal, there are many who are in favor of it. Given this support, then how can the referendums be deemed illegal or a sham? Memories are short as to when this war actually started and how many people have been killed. One figure put the number of people killed to at least 13,000. Another puts it at 10,000. Keeping in mind, these are the number of deaths before the war, which began in the year 2014. Russia had tried since 2014 to reach a diplomatic solution with the West over this conflict. It was called the Minsk Agreements. Why the Minsk Agreement failed depends on who you speak to. The former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych accused Kiev and its U.S. patrons responsible for the poor implementation of the peace agreement. Yet at the heart of the conflict lies NATO's eastward expansion. The Kremlin claims that the West broke a promise that it made in the 1990s not to expand NATO after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Putin said NATO had promised not to expand an inch to the east, promises made to the former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev during negotiations between the West and the Soviet Union over German unification. Back in 1998, NATO was confined to Western Europe, yet today it is at Russia's gate. This shows Putin's accusation of NATO's eastward expansion to hold true. Putin therefore set Ukraine as its red line, hence Crimea, and now the referendums that are taking place in these four regions will set up a wall to stop NATO's eastward expansion. Not surprisingly, the outcome of the referendums are predicted to be in Russia's favor.
Now, the fairness of these referendums have been questioned by the West, which have condemned and dismissed them as acts of annexation by Russia. Yet there is no denying that there are many who support the holding of the polls. They want the war on their territory to come to an end. Now, these regions have been bombed continuously by Ukraine since 2014, and there are fears that Ukraine may bomb these territories to prevent the voting.
By incorporating these four areas, Moscow has set up these regions to be part of its own. As such, Ukrainian attacks to retake them can be portrayed as attacks on Russia itself. And this is where things have taken a nuclear turn. Russia can potentially use that to justify even a nuclear response. The U.S. President Joe Biden addressed that threat at the UNGA.
Again, just today, President Putin has made overt nuclear threats against Europe and a reckless disregard for the responsibilities of the non-proliferation regime.
But the Russian president's nuclear warning stemmed from the U.S. and NATO's nuclear threat first. The nuclear threat exchange is enough to make anyone conclude that there should be a solution drawn up immediately before things get out of hand in this conflict. That, however, was thwarted by the West, who is keen on continuing this conflict. Russia and Ukraine may have agreed on a tentative deal to end the war back in April, but the former UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson prevented that from happening. The agreement, in short, would have seen Russia withdraw to its position on February 23, when it controlled part of the Donbas region and all of Crimea. And in exchange, Ukraine would have promised not to seek NATO membership and instead receive security guarantees from a number of countries. The conflict itself cannot end now in the eyes of the West. The profits made from military assistance to Ukraine are staggering. Furthermore, the U.S. is using scaremongering tactics into making European countries, like the Baltic nations in particular, into believing that Russia could target them next for the sake of profits. It was reported U.S. arms manufacturers were not cashing in directly from thousands of missiles, drones, and other weapons, but they stood to profit big time over the long run by supplying countries eager to boost their defenses against Russia. And finally, the U.S. was making massive profits in another area, energy sales to Europe, in particular, gas sales. Some single shipments were bringing in $200 million. The U.S. was now sending 60% of its liquefied natural gas exports to Europe, up from less than 20% this time a year ago. And this is a classic case of U.S. war profiteering.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listener's Special on this Sunday, September 25th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today, and accept our condolences to you on the passing away anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as well as the martyrdom anniversary of the second infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. Thank you. This is another edition of Listener's Special, and as you know, Listener's Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. And here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, Olof Rotavara from Finland, and Kurt Ettlinger from Germany. And we have also received so many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails or letters, including Anwar Iqbal from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Marta from India has sent us an email. We've received an email from Australia from David Foster, and from Finland, we have an email from David Mabi. Please stay with us. Welcome back. This is Listener's Special, and here we've received an email from Bangladesh from Anwar Iqbal. Anwar Iqbal says, "Dear staff, with due respect, we would like to say that we, the club members of World Radio Listeners Club, want to listen your radio program regularly. We also want to know more about your country. Please send us your frequency and program schedule with timetable. Also send us your books, magazines, poster, and other promotional materials if possible." Salam and warm greetings to you, Anwar Iqbal, and thank you very much for sending us this email. Unfortunately, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio is halted due to the global pandemic. So you should refer to our website in order to find the frequency schedule. With this address, www.parstoday.com/en. And to know more about Iran, you can listen to our programs. You can follow our programs, which introduce Iran in details. Thank you again for sending us this email. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification. And Marta from India has sent us an email. He or she says, "I am a listener of your radio service. I enjoy listening to news, world reports, traditional music, culture, and your mailbox program. At some time, your frequency is very poor. Please change your signal." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially from IRIB English Radio staff to you, Marta from India. Thank you very much for sending us this email, and sorry for the trouble you had regarding the frequency. As you said, the frequency was poor, but we will fix it very soon if the trouble is on our behalf. Thank you again. Please accept our electronic QSL card as a verification. Wish you the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Thank you. And from Australia, from Southern Hemisphere, we've received an email from David Foster. David Foster says, greetings from Australia. I was very pleased to hear the IRIB English radio few days ago. I would be most grateful if you could verify that this report is correct with your verification QSL card or an electronic QSL card. Can you mention on the card that it was an IRIB program with details? Thank you for your time and looking forward to hearing from you. Best wishes from Australia. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially from IRIB English radio staff. Please accept our gratitudes to you for sending us this email. So it's also an honor to have you as a listener, David Foster from Australia. Again, thank you and accept our electronic QSL card, of course, with the details as a verification. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon, David. Wish you all the best. And let's see. Yes. Here we have another email from Finland, from David Moby. Let's see what David says. Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, a couple of months ago, I sent you a reception report, which you kindly read in your listeners' special program. Since they have listened to your evening broadcast starting at 19:20 from time to time, I thought you might like to get another reception report from me containing some good news. I listened to you and the sound quality was much improved. The modulation level sound loudness was about 25% to 30%, which made audibility easier. I always enjoy listening to you and getting directly the Islamic Republic of Iran's view on world events. This is most useful. Thank you very much. Listeners Special is always enjoyable. And thanks again for mentioning my earlier report. I would definitely appreciate a program about the basic concept of Islam. So many people here in the West have absolutely little idea of what Islam really is. Perhaps you have such a broadcast. Please advise me. Greater understanding would definitely further the cause of world peace, in my view. I hope this email finds you in good health. I would really appreciate you for sending me an electronic QSL. In the meantime, I listen to you when I can and enjoy your broadcast very much. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English radio staff to you, David Mabi from Finland. And please accept our warm and deep appreciations to you for sending us such detailed, email. You described the quality of the programs, the quality of the sound, and it was great. Your email really made my day. It was great. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and the programs, and especially many thanks. Please accept our particular thanks for letting us know your opinion about the programs. As you said, you want more programs on Islam and the real Islam, which is tarnished in the Western world. So please accept our appreciations to you. Write to us soon and tell us your views, more views about IRIB English radio programs. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification. David Mabi from Finland, wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So, dear listeners, here we come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. But before that, please accept our condolences to you on the passing away anniversary of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as well as the martyrdom anniversary of the second infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and Listeners, a special program. Have a good time and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has spoken at the 77th UN General Assembly in New York. His speech was directed at the promotion of peace and justice. In the same breath, he slammed countries that promoted this notion, yet inaction did the opposite, like the U.S. and its warmongering policies. In this edition of the program, we will look at some of the points that Iran's President has made and why Iran spoke from a position of strength compared to the U.S. when it comes to making a world a better place and a more peaceful place to live in. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Joining us is Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst from Marseille. Also joining us is Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator who joins us from London. Welcome to you both. Said Mohsen Abbas, let me first start with you. Obviously, there's many things that Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said during his address at the UNGA, which was his first time there, making the statements in the speech that he made. Let's talk about how he said that Iran was not seeking an atomic weapon. He made sure that something that was known before, that it got highlighted again, and that it was a fatwa coming from Imam Khamenei, and demanded U.S. guarantees that it would abide by any JCPOA sanctions removal deal. Why do you think he repeated that and deemed that to be important to highlight in his speech?
Because the Islamic Republic of Iran has some principles, and unlike the kind of immoral politics that we're used to across the globe, we tend to find that politics is a dirty word, fundamentally, because nobody says what they mean. And the Americans, of course, have demonstrated that within the JCPOA. The Europeans have demonstrated their ill will in that regard during the negotiations with Iran also. But the Islamic Republic of Iran has stuck very solidly to what it said, even though nobody else was abiding by the JCPOA. And the Americans walked out without even a flinch unilaterally. Nonetheless, Iran tried its best for at least a year, if not more, to comply with what was an agreement which effectively had already been made redundant. And since then, it's been a huge amount of patience shown on the part of the Iranian negotiators, the Iranian establishment, to try and keep this JCPOA scenario alive. In reality, you could very strongly argue that the Islamic Republic of Iran doesn't need the JCPOA. They've done quite well, thank you very much, through resistance economy, through a greater direction towards the east, the rise of the Eurasian axis, the increasing kind of look away from the West, particularly with this establishment. What you're finding is even less traction than the previous one, where there was a possibility that they were leaning towards the West and overcompensating, trying to really win over the hearts and minds of the Western powers. The truth of the matter is the Western powers want one thing from Iran. They want the absolute annihilation, destruction, and termination of the Islamic Republic's establishment. They don't want the existence of this establishment, unless, of course, tomorrow Ayatollah Khamenei comes along, bends his knee, bows to the neoliberalists and the neocons and the Anglo-American Zionist empire, does everything that Israel wants them to do, hands over the wealth of Iran, and resubjugates its people to the greater money mafias of the world. You know, unless Iran really wants to do that, unless the Iranian public wants that, unless the Iranian establishment wants that, I'm afraid what the alternative is a sort of ongoing enmity and an ongoing guarantee that the West will do its level best to try and destroy Iran.
Elijah Magnier, there were so many things that I could have started out this program with, but I chose that one. And let me see if you agree with me, because I wanted to make an analogy with how Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi talked about the peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program, saying that you have 2% of the world's nuclear activity taking place in Iran, but yet you have 35% of all inspections, ratio-wise, taking place on Iran's civilian nuclear program. And then you compare that with the way that Joe Biden came out when he first started his speech, where he said, we have to defend Ukraine, we got to stand up for them, which all translates into this military conflict, a prolonging. Is that a correct analogy to make in the way that Iran is promoting peace through the statements that we saw, where that notion and justice was peppered or was sprayed in the Iranian president's statement as opposed to what Joe Biden was saying?
Well, indeed, it is correct. There is also more I could add to it, is in the last 43 years, Iran never declared war on any country, while the Americans declared war in Afghanistan, on Iraq, on Syria, on Lebanon, on Yemen, and supporting the Saudis in the war in Yemen. So we see that there is no similarity between what Iran is offering to the neighbors and what the Americans are offering to the world. The Americans are only talking now and very busy with their war against Russia and very preoccupied with gathering all the Western forces in country, particularly the EU, behind it, not concerned really what's happening to its allies, because they are the ones suffering. And Iran is saying, I'm ready to abide by the JCPOA if you offer the deal, even if you offer enough guarantees. While the Americans are talking from a position they are out of the JCPOA, they only offering wars, they offering weapons to Ukraine, they pushing the Europeans to offer more weapons. Nobody here in Europe has any more weapons in their warehouses. So any real war, they are in real trouble. And the Americans are producing more weapons just to send to Ukraine, because it is a Western war against Russia. So they need Iran at the moment, because Iran is their only hope, particularly when President Vladimir Putin announced that he is calling upon a part of reservists and he is willing to continue the war. Now, what the Europeans are going to do without the Russian oil that they are going to start imposing sanction on the 5th of December? Of course, they have Iran, they have Venezuela, and with both countries, there are sanctions imposed by the U.S. and particularly by the U.S., and nobody else dares to make business with Iran, particularly the EU, who did not, as your guest rightly said, abide by the agreement of the JCPOA and did not do any step to respect their deal and their part of the deal. So what we have today is a country that the U.S. is leading the world, but is leading the world toward more wars and more destructions. And Iran is saying, I can help you, but give me the enough insurance to return to the JCPOA, but I'm still in, but I will abide by it if you show the real intention that you are trustworthy. And
sure.
There is no point in Iran talking at the UN General Assembly, because a quarter of the world there are pro-US, and the two other two-thirds of the world is really not against the U.S., but not with the U.S., and preferring to stay either on the side or on the side of Iran.
Right. Well, I'm wondering how those people reacted, Hossein Mohsen Abbas, and how maybe you reacted also, Hossein Mohsen Abbas, when we heard Ebrahim Raisi speaking, and he was speaking about some of the issues that we're going to hopefully get to in this program, like unilateralism and the way that the U.S. has gained political leverage through controlling institutions over other countries. And then all of a sudden, when he starts talking about martyred General Qasem Soleimani and brings up a placard of him at the podium there at the UN General Assembly for the world to see that it was the U.S. that assassinated this general that was at the forefront of eradicating terrorists from the region and even beyond. What impression did you get from that? And what do you think people thought, that this was the U.S. that did it? And here you have Ebrahim Raisi raising that point.
Well, I think it's interesting that Raisi went for the humanitarian card. I mean, it's usually a weapon that often the West tries to use against Iran by inventing all sorts of bloated arguments about how despotic Iran is. I mean, of course, that's what's pumped out by most of the Western media, Western propaganda. Most Westerners haven't been to Iran for decades, if ever at all. So a lot of this propaganda can stick, but For Iran to take hold of that particular issue and to raise Haji Qasem Soleimani's placard is very significant, because what Iran is pointing to is that this region, as long as it has the American interference in the way they are prepared to interfere, you know, with their industrial military complex, with their sort of color revolutions, with their supporting of despotic, illegitimate leaders around the Gulf states, with their support of the Mossad and of Israel's Odin Yinon plan to expand across the whole of the Middle East, how on earth can you possibly have peace? The likes of, Haji Qasem Soleimani, who were killed, not even in action. He was killed as a diplomat, traveling on the invitation of the Iraqi government, and the Americans didn't even respect that. What this shows is that the American regime has dropped so low that they actually don't really respect any international law. There is no rule of law that they really respect. So human rights violations, I think this is where Ebrahim Raisi was trying to hit, was that, look, do you really want a world where we have one bully, one unilateral bullying power that makes everybody do exactly what it wants? It was and is okay to plunder, rape, pillage, destroy, kill, murder, maim, by their own admission. Don't forget, Mike Pompeo was very, very famously on air admitting that they steal, plunder, and do all sorts of other murderous acts, and they do it gleefully. And this is what the CIA's job is, et cetera. It's the job of the Mossad. It's the job of the MI6. So when you're faced with a force which knows no morality, which knows no real human rights, but touts democracy and human rights as its major reason for being in West Asia, exposing them with what they did to Qasem Soleimani is symbolic of what they've been doing against the Yemenis, against the Syrians, against the Libyans, the devastation, the ruin, the destruction they leave behind when they don't get their own way, and the theft of the gold and the oil and whatnot. Well, that's de rigueur. Whether they destroy a nation or not, they're going to steal those anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think the plea to the world, even though as my colleague rightly pointed out, the plea to the world goes almost on deaf ears, because most of these nations are puppet puppets or fear economic sanctions from America. And again, that terrorism of an economic kind, the psychological warfare terrorism that they engage in, the manipulation behind the scenes, these are all part of a war which Iran has been at the front line of against America ever since 1979. And now, of course, the Russians and all sorts of the Chinese as well, perhaps, are going to be gradually embroiled by the absolutely psychotic behavior of the Anglo-Zionist American empire.
So what I'm curious about, Elijah Magnier, is that when you sift through and dissect what Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has said, and then you you try to look for things there that maybe are weak at any sense of the word in terms of what he's trying to present, and this is not to just compare Iran's President's statement to the U.S. statement, it seems like Iran and Raisi, on behalf of Iran, were speaking on a position of strength, because what he was saying was, in essence, a world that should be void of all these different injustices and negativity that's being pursued and then executed by the U.S. And he named some examples. Did you get that feeling at all in terms of the way that Iran has conducted itself vis-a-vis the U.S.?
I get this impression from the first day Raisi was nominated the president. So we've seen the Americans were playing a bit cool, thinking that Iran is going to rush to ask, please return to the JCPOA negotiation. We saw how Raisi waited for 5 months before starting the negotiation. That's one. Two, the Iranian negotiator refused to have the U.S. flag in the room where the negotiation was conducted with the Europeans on behalf of the Americans, and never accepted a direct meeting or direct negotiation with the Americans. The three, we see that today when Iran is saying, I want to prove that you're going to stay in the JCPOA, and you're not going just to sign the deal, and then after that you start imposing sanctions under different reasons that are really a way for the U.S. to reimpose more sanctions. So we see Iran, had Iran wanted to sign the JCPOA, it would have been signed months ago or even a year ago. But Iran is looking after the interest of the Iranian population by saying either we sign a good deal or no deal at all. But at the same time, Iran is sending a message to the world saying, even if I don't sign the deal, and I am still in the JCPOA agreement, it doesn't mean that I'm going to go and make a bomb, although I have the knowledge to do it because I've reached 60%. I have all the advanced centrifuge of the 8th and 9th generation, and I can do it whenever I want. It's not up to you to decide if I do the bomb or not, because I will do it if I want to, but I don't want to. So this is a position of strength. At the United Nations, Raisi is talking from a position of strength, is aware what the world is going through, and saying, I am not signing the deal, although the Iranian negotiator is here in the UN, ready to negotiate, but I'm not going to sign any deal. That is a position of strength.
Sure. Well, the U.S. has always tried to alienate Iran, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, and I believe through one of the statements that our guest there, Elijah Magnier, said before, that I recall, he said that Iran is going into this General Assembly from a position of strength, coming high off of the SCO summit that was held in Uzbekistan. And there, when you have Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi in the presence of world leaders speak and be present there, then you can't be isolated. Now, the thing is, and I'm curious about this, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, do you think that there are many countries who would like to take this stance against, not just against the U.S., but to push back against some of the U.S. ways and methods that it has used and speak up against it like Iran has done, but they're afraid to do that because they might be subject to U.S. focus, whether it's sanctions or foreign policy?
I think you're absolutely right. I think the overwhelming majority of nations in the world are deep down sick and tired of American bullying and threats. I mean, that's how they essentially operate their empire. They threaten people through as I mentioned, color revolutions, economic threats through military threat. They have done this for decades, of course, and now they're masters at it. But the time is running out, because what we're seeing increasingly now is the confidence of the likes of China and Russia and Iran, three of the major economic powers, now beginning to talk about moving away from the dollar. This never happened before. They're talking about creating new means of trading with each other, away from the SWIFT banking system. There's talk of opening up that $5 billion credit line which Russia wants to offer Iran. The Chinese are not worried about sanctions when they're doing deals with Iran, Iraq, and others, going into the multi-millions around building the Belt and Road Initiative. All of this basically is saying to the Americans, look, you can't have it all your own way. A multipolar world is a much better place, rather than the kind of dictatorial unipolar world that you've been dreaming of. And I think that's where the world is heading. The Eurasian axis, I believe, is an inevitability. The Americans are making it an inevitability by really scoring own goal after own goal. They could have a softer policy towards Iran or Russia. They could share the cake. But the trouble is they've got so greedy, and they've had it so their own way for so long, that they really are drunk on using military means and other means and their other cunning tactics to see if they can coerce, scare, and co-opt people into doing what they want. And all these other powers are saying, you can see China's policy. They tend to do fair deals. They don't go in and invade countries. They crack deals, and they stick to those deals. They offer fair recompense in terms of building infrastructures of nations where they get resources. You could argue the wrongs and rights of that, but nonetheless, they're not imperialists in that formal sense of just raping and looting and installing leaders that they think will be conforming. So there's this rival power, or a series of rival powers, which are now coming up, and they will challenge America, and it will create a world that will be in flux for a considerable time yet.
Sure. Well, this world order, that's a new world order, was expressed by the Iranian president, Elijah Magnier, in a few different ways. One of them was through denouncing unilateralism, in which Raisi said that American foreign policy, he said, over the past century, had actually proven that the unilateralistic approach that the U.S. had actually pursued was at the self-interest and at the expense of partnerships. Do you think countries like, say, Mohsen Abbas said, don't speak up, but they really are sick and tired of it, and they perhaps are the ones that Raisi are talking about, that they feel that way?
I fully agree with Mohsen Abbas. What he said is really the truth, and this is the reality today. And we've seen that in the meeting during the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, where half of the world population representative and leaders were present to talk about the exchange with their goods and trade with local currency, and they were outside the U.S. orbit. Yes, indeed, the U.S. is challenged in its unilateralism. It's still strong. We should not think that the U.S. is not going to defend itself and is not going to cause more harm and to be more harsh than it is today, because it's going to defend its throne and its position worldwide. And to do that is going to cause more damage to the world, and it is causing it, mainly to its allies in Europe and in Africa and other people who are in need of support, particularly in Afghanistan, confiscating $9 billion, etc. So yes, the U.S. is going to defend its unilateralism, but it is challenged and is no longer going to hold for very long.
Last point that time allows us to make, say, Mohsen Abbas, I'm looking at the point that the U.S. President Joe Biden made on the use of veto power, where he said that countries should refrain from the use of this veto power. I'm wondering, when he says that, doesn't he realize then why does the U.S. use that veto power when it comes to Israel?
Well, the double standards are laughable, aren't they? This is what Aga Raisi talked about, the double standards of these Western powers. And they know it, but this, of course, they get away with murder because they can. And literally, by supporting Israel and doing what they did in terms of planting that kind of cuckoo in the nest in the Middle East, what they've done is they've perpetuated a war and a conflict which would never have been there. I mean, take Israel out of the equation there, and the odds are that you really wouldn't have the kind of turmoil and chaos and conflict. That's all created fundamentally and deliberately by the money mafias who wanted the oil and Israel to sit there as their policeman, and they continue to be hell-bent on doing that. Islamic Republic of Iran was the first to stand up genuinely in a real way. Yes, you had Jamal Abdel Nasser and all the previous wars that were kicked off. But in reality, the first constructive and really long-standing opposition to the tyranny of Zionism and Anglo-American Zionism has come from Iran. That makes it another target. And I don't think Iran is not going to let go that. They're going to demand justice for the oppressed, and not least of all for their own people in Iran.
Thank you so much. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Elijah Magnier, a pleasure, journalist and political analyst from Marseille. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his immaculate progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to yet another edition from a series of Q&A in Islamic beliefs from IRIB English Radio. If you have been following this series of shows, we are trying to answer some doubts or misconceptions on the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, or on religious issues in general. Like always, we invite some scholars and researchers from Qom Seminary Schools. This time, again, we have the honor to have